welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, comedy, later on, the Four Star Playhouse from 1949. But first, an episode of The Bickersons, along with comedian Frank Morgan. The CBS episode from May 14th, 1948.
Ladies and gentlemen, speaking for the makers of Old Gold Cigarettes, who are pleased to present the 34th in a series of new programs with Carmen Dragon and his orchestra, starring Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's lovable Frank Morgan, the genial Don Ameche, and charming Francis Langford.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening.
Excuse me, Don. This package just arrived by messenger.
For me?
Well, I don't know. It's just addressed to the Old Gold program.
Hey, oh. Wait a minute. That might be for me. I've been expecting a box of Yonkers from New York.
Box of Yonkers.
Yeah, I've been running short lately. Say, Don, have you heard my last Yonker?
I hope so.
Don't you want to hear it?
Oh, go ahead. Yonk away.
Okay. A well-bred baker married the toast of the town, and they're expecting a little crumb in June. Something?
Nothing.
Here, Francis, you want to open this bag?
Sure, Don. Well, of all things, a lady's bathing suit.
Wait a minute. There's a note inside. It says, Dear Mr. Morgan... Oh, this is for Frank.
What does the note say?
Dear Mr. Morgan, enclosed is the bathing suit you voted for in the May issue of Cosmopolitan magazine. We're very pleased with your choice. Sincerely, the Catalina Swimsuit Company.
You know, a friend of mine modeled the suit that Mr. Morgan chose. Pretty, isn't it, Doc?
Yeah, I suppose so. But I like the old-fashioned type with ruffles on the hips and bows on the legs. I'm crazy about those gay 90s models.
So am I. They're so grateful. All you do is buy them some salt water...
Frank!
And you can have them... This bow-legged model with the ruffled hips, Dodger.
I was discussing an ancient lady's bathing costume.
Oh, bathing ladies, ancient custom. Well, I,
No bathing, Frank.
What?
Somebody sent you this bare midriff swimsuit.
For me? Let me see that, Dodger. Oh, size 18. That's perfect.
What are you going to do with it, Frank?
I'm going to take it out and have it filled. You should have seen what was in it when I judged it.
Was the model pretty, Frank?
Yeah, she was pretty, Frank. Kept nothing from me. I wish I could remember her name.
Betsy Carroll.
Betsy Carroll, of course. How are you, my dear Miss Carroll?
What?
Well, I'm glad to see you're still in good shape. You look like $1 million.
Thank you.
Yes, and you got your money invested in the right places, too. Would you care to attend a pool party at my house tonight?
I'm sorry, I don't swim.
Well, who said anything about swimming? We'll have an informal dinner and then play Pony Express.
Pony Express?
Yes, that's post office with a little more horsing around. Will you be there, Miss Carroll?
I'm not Miss Carroll.
Oh.
I'm Frances Langford. Mrs. Hall, Mr. Morgan.
Oh, Miss Morgan. Well, I better get out.
Now, just a minute, Frank. I'm interested in knowing why Cosmopolitan magazine picked you to judge a competition in ladies' bathing suits.
Well, what is more natural than to select a man who designed bathing suits for the crowned heads of Europe?
They wear bathing suits on their heads?
Yes, keeps the sun out of their eyes. In 1926, I introduced an exact duplicate of the Tahitian lady's traditional bathing costume known as balanga.
What's a balanga?
Well, it's a topless suit without a bottom.
That could fit anybody.
Exactly. My next creation was a little woolen number that I modeled myself before a huge gathering at Atlantic City.
A little woolen number?
Yes. The demonstration would have been a great success, except my swimming trunks were ruined by a horde of bashful moths.
Bashful moths?
Yes, they took a back seat. Later, I designed a two-piece swimsuit which enabled me to break the world's long-distance record by cutting the previous time in half.
In half?
Yes. Unfortunately, the judges disqualified me when I plowed into the beach 18 miles ahead of my nearest opponent.
Well, why did they disqualify you?
Well, they discovered that I had an outboard motor concealed in my trunks.
For a little thing like that.
Well, it wasn't so little. It was 6 horsepower and carried a crew of 4
horsepower.
You couldn't swim across an old-fashioned without using the orange slice for a paddle.
What?
I don't want to intrude, Don, but Mr. Morgan happens to be telling the truth.
Well, is that pleasant, Mr. Lardbucket? Pull up a bucket and rest your lard, mister.
I looked up the records and found that Mr. Morgan actually won the Olympic 800-meter freestyle event by swimming it in 200 meters.
Yes.
Well, how could he do that? He took a shortcut.
This boy will go far.
What's more, he's the only man ever to swim the English Channel underwater, blindfolded and handcuffed, with his feet tied behind his back.
He went too far.
Oh, Mr. Morgan, you told me to...
Go away! I haven't heard such incompetent lying since I worked in the refund department of the Income Tax Bureau.
Then you're not a swimmer, huh?
Nonsense. The Morgans have been expert swimmers for generations, beginning with my grandfather, Sidestroke Morgan, down to my uncle, Dog Paddle, and my aunt, Crawl.
Grand Crawl.
An underhanded old creep. Always kept her head above water when she came out of a dive.
What a wonderful family. What's going on here?
I'm sorry, Mr. Morgan. Please tell us about your ancestors.
Oh, very well. These three hardy adventurers made the pearl fishing industry what it is today.
Were they pearl divers or swimmers?
Both. As a matter of fact, my grandfather established the present world's record for staying underwater.
Really?
Really. On March 18th, 1894, at 9 o'clock in the morning, the old gentleman filled his lungs with air, dove off his boat at Honolulu, and descended to a depth of 60 fathoms.
And how long did he stay under?
He hasn't come up yet. It was after this unfortunate incident that I was appointed as his successor.
Oh, naturally.
I had all the qualifications. I was Morgan, born in Hawaii, schooled in pearl diving, and I had already demonstrated my ability to drink like a fish. Swim like a fish! To the pearling grounds on an odd craft bedecked with native fruit and known as hookanuka.
A hookanuka? What's that?
A small pineapple float.
I'll have a large pistachio sundae.
Whipped cream?
Nuts.
Nuts to you? I only asked you.
Well, Mr. Morgan, you were fishing for pearls.
Pearls what? Oh, pearls! Boat, the drunken crew cheered as the captain presented me with his personal silver oyster blade.
Silver?
Ornamental, but not practical.
Oh.
Still, not to use it would have been considered an insult, so while the men caroused on deck, I went below to sharpen up the captain's dull wife. Knife!
I knew you meant knife, Mr. Morgan.
Did you really? Well, the ocean was getting choppier by the minute, so I quickly donned my shorts and dove into the sea in search of pearls.
Yeah, here we go.
Below, the water was crystal clear, and I walked along the ocean floor for hours, gazing at the delightful sunset.
How long did you walk across the ocean floor?
Well, pretty long. I paused to pick up...
How long?
Several hours. The amazing floor...
Now, hold it, Morgan. What's this wandering on the ocean floor for hours?
Yeah,
what do you do about breath control?
I use clothes. Carry was about to return to the surface when suddenly I felt a spinny fin brush against my thigh.
Don't interrupt, Don.
I spun around and there was a giant cuttlefish looking me in the eye. I glanced quickly to the left and there was a hammerhead shark looking me in the other eye. Ahead of me was an octopus looking me in the puss.
Did you go up to the surface?
I couldn't. Above me was the pearl diver's deadliest enemy, the ugly sawfish. We saw each other at precisely the same moment, and a shudder ran through the fish. No!
Go on, Morgan. Tell us about your battle with the sawfish.
Well, I'm sorry to say there wasn't much of a battle, Dodger.
No.
The deep-sea monster attacked me from the south flank and ran his saw through my bathing suit. With the superhuman effort, I snapped off his fire-like proboscis and rose to the surface.
You still had the saw in your suit?
Yes. It wasn't until 10 days later that I could locate a doctor competent enough to remove it. I was in an awful fix.
Couldn't you sit down?
Couldn't sit down, couldn't stand up, and I couldn't get dressed.
Well, what did you do?
I had to rough it for 10 days. After my injury, I gave up pearl diving and retired to my laboratory to experiment with a new type of cultured pearl.
Boy, you're sure moving around tonight.
After a great deal of research, I discovered that with the proper treatment, pearls might be manufactured by clams.
clams?
Yes, I reasoned that since oysters created their pearls only through being irritated, the same method could be applied to clams.
That sounds reasonable.
It does? I mean, it does. I invested every penny I had, transformed my laboratory into an enormous bowl, filled it with water, and placed 200 pedigreed clams inside.
Oh, now we're getting somewhere.
For weeks, I searched for things that would produce an irritation. I built a fire beneath the bowl, hoping the heat would disturb them. Then I proceeded to throw in plants that I discovered the clams disliked.
Well, that ought to make them mad.
I threw in a bit of celery root from Fiji, a form of fungus mushroom from the Netherlands, a potato vine from the Orient, and a pinch of salt from the Red Sea. For 5 days, the huge cauldron bubbled and churned. And on the sixth day, I lifted the lid to inspect the clams, and what do you think?
You had produced a pearl.
No, I had the biggest bowl of clam chowder in the world.
Now, here are Don Ameche and Francis Langford as John and Blanche Bickerson in The Honeymoon is Over. This day, the 14th of May, 1948, will go down in history as precedent-shattering. John Bickerson is smiling. Despite the lateness of the hour, the fact that he has had perhaps the hardest day of his life at the office, has forgotten his front door key, and is forced to wait for a grumbling janitor to let him in, John Bickerson is smiling. Why? Tell us, John.
2 weeks vacation with pay.
Oh, wait till I tell Blanche.
Brother, I've longed for this. I'll sew myself into the bed sheets and sleep for 10 days.
Good evening, Mr. Hooker. Sorry to get you out of bed, but I forgot my key.
What are you laughing at?
Laughing? Was I laughing? I'm sorry, Mr. Hooker. I didn't intend to flaunt my good fortune, but I have cast aside my fetters.
Huh?
I am as free as nature first made man ere the base laws of servitude began. When wild in the woods, the noble savage ran. Dryden. Good night, Mr. Hooker.
Poor fellow's been working too hard. I knew he'd crack up.
Home, sweet home.
John?
Hello, Blanche. How is my beautiful wife?
What?
Would you like me to bring you a glass of milk and a cookie? And here is a little present for you.
Oh, you look wonderful, honey.
Oh, this is awful.
What's the matter?
This morning I burned my hand on the stove. I ripped my only pair of nylons, my inlay fell out, and now you come home drunk.
What are you talking about? I'm not drunk, and you know it.
Then why are you so nice to me?
What's the use? When I come home tired and can't smile, she beats. When I come home and try to be pleasant, she accuses me. Put out the lights.
You're not going to bed with your shoes on.
Yes, I am. I work like a horse. I might as well sleep like a horse.
Why'd you bring me a present? What have you been up to, John?
Oh, stop it.
A husband doesn't bring his wife a present unless he's done something wrong.
I've brought you a million presents, and I've never done anything wrong.
Never?
Not since the day I married you. Let me sleep.
You're asleep. That's the easiest way out when you've got a guilty conscience.
Blanche, I tell you, I haven't got a guilty conscience.
Then why did you buy me an expensive present?
It isn't an expensive present. It's the crummiest present I could find.
I can believe that, all right. What is it?
Why don't you open it and see?
I bet you're going to throw away your money on some stupid thing I can't even use.
Oh, you can use it fine.
A home beauty outfit.
It's got everything. Just what you need.
Wrinkle cream? Freckle remover? Hair darkener, false eyelashes, chin-reducing straps. What kind of a present do you call this? What are you hinting at?
How did I know what was in it?
Nobody would use this but a homely woman.
Oh, that's not true. All women use it.
They do not. Only the homely ones, and I wouldn't touch it.
The sales girl in the drugstore said she uses it all the time, and she's not half as homely as you are.
What?
I mean, she's just as pretty as you.
That's just about what happened. You walked into a drugstore, saw a pretty face, and didn't know what you were buying.
I didn't look at her face at all.
If you're going to buy me a present, why didn't you get me something I could use? Why didn't you get me an ounce of Taboo?
What's that?
It's my favorite perfume.
Well, you got a dresser full of perfume. Taboo, Sabu, Snapoo, and Sterno. All perfumes than any woman alive. Look at those bottles.
They're all empty, and it's all your fault. You left the corks out and it evaporated.
I leave the cork out of my bourbon, don't I?
What about it?
That never evaporates.
You never give it a chance. It's different with perfume, and I don't see why I should go without it because of your nasty habits. What do you think makes the thing dry up, John?
I wish I knew.
Don't be so funny.
Oh, I'm not funny. I'm sleepy. You know, I worked at the office for 18 hours without a let-up.
That's what you said you did.
That's what I did. I did it for what I thought was a good reason, but now I'm sorry.
Why?
Forget it.
What is it, John? What happened? You lost your job.
I didn't lose my job. I got 2 weeks vacation with pay. It's the first vacation I've had in 7 years, and I wanted to enjoy it. But no, you wouldn't stand for that, would you?
How can you say that, John? Of course I want you to enjoy yourself. Where's the money?
In my wallet. 2 full weeks' pay. Now, do you mind if I rest?
You know, John, I haven't had a vacation either. The change of scene will do us both a world of good. If you're so tired, there's only one thing for you to do. He's doing it. Where did he say that money was?
Put that money back.
I thought you were sleeping, dear.
What are you doing with that money? What's the matter, Blanche?
I'm not doing anything. I'm just counting it to see if they gave you the right amount.
It's the right amount. Put it back and go to sleep.
You needn't talk like that. I was going to steal it.
Who said you were?
Just like you to make a crack like that.
I didn't make any cracks at all.
Go on. Call the police and have me arrested. Put me in prison.
Nobody's putting you in prison.
They'll lock me up in solitary confinement. Rats running all over me in my cell, and I stand helpless, shaking at the iron bars. No way to escape.
Blanche.
Why don't you send me a hacksaw, John?
Stop getting hysterical.
Now, don't go accusing me of taking your money. It's half mine anyway.
It's all yours. All I want is sleep.
I don't see why we can't go away on a vacation for a few days.
You go. I told you I'm going to do nothing but sleep for the whole 2 weeks.
You'll have to get up sometime.
Not even once.
How are you going to collect your unemployment insurance?
What unemployment insurance?
You're going to be out of work for 2 weeks.
You can't collect unemployment insurance if you've got a job.
If you're not working, you haven't got a job, have you?
Well, that's different.
Why?
I don't know why. Nobody does it, that's all.
Well, what's the good of unemployment insurance if you don't get any money when you're unemployed?
Being on a vacation is not the same as being unemployed.
Don't tell me.
What?
Clara's husband, Barney, has never worked in his life, and he collects his unemployment check every week.
He can't collect any checks if he doesn't work.
I thought you said they only pay when you don't work.
That's right. But you have to work before you can be out of work so you have a legitimate claim to the money you earn when you don't get it.
I don't get it.
Oh, leave me alone.
You wouldn't talk that way to Gloria Goosey.
Ooh, now don't start with Gloria Goosey.
Believe me, if poor Gloria Goosey would let you in the house, she'd make you work plenty.
She always lets me in the house, and I never have to work at all. You mean I hate Gloria Goosey? Why don't you let me sleep, Blaine?
I'll let you sleep, all right. And I'm telling you now, John, you've got 2 weeks off, and you're going to do one of two things. Do you hear me?
I hear you.
Either you start collecting your unemployment insurance, or else you fill in those 2 weeks with another job.
Another job? This is my vacation.
I don't care. It won't hurt you to work those 2 weeks, and we could use the money.
Okay, I'll get another job in the morning.
You say it, but you won't do it. Do it now.
What?
Go on, get up and get a job, you loafer.
What kind of a job can I get at 2 o'clock in the morning?
What's the matter with being a night watchman?
I won't do it. I won't do it. You've got no right to deprive me of my 2 weeks off. I don't care what happens, I won't get another job.
All right, then. Promise you'll take me away on a vacation.
There's no way out, I promise.
Will you swear?
Every minute that we're away.
I know where we'll go. Lake Tahoe. I'll only have to buy a few more dresses, and you can wear your dungarees all the time.
Dungarees?
Just tell him you came in from fishing. And if it gets cold, I know just the thing. Let me show you what I picked up on sale yesterday.
I don't want to see it.
Just look at this, John. Isn't it stunning?
What's so stunning about a bath rug?
It's a fur cape, silly.
Well, where's the fur?
That's the way it's supposed to look. It's the very latest style. Sheared beaver.
Sheared beaver?
It's been clipped.
So have I.
Not. This is worth every penny, John. You know I'm a good judge of fur.
Oh, sure. In the past 2 years, you bought a bald mink and a plucked skunk.
Well, what's wrong with them?
The mink stinks and the skunk shrunk. Blanche, how much did you pay for this one?
Only $94.
$94? Oh, Blanche, you didn't. Get that money back, you hear me? Get it back.
Don't get hysterical. As soon as the house...
Blanche, how could you do this to me? I deny myself everything. I've been sewing rubber heels on your old pocketbooks and wearing them for shoes. I've been eating a panty out of my overcoat shoulders to save on breakfast cereal. I don't even drink my bourbon anymore. I just chew the cork and hit myself on the head with a bottle. I never spend a nickel on myself.
You bought a bag of popcorn yesterday.
That wasn't popcorn. My teeth fell out from malnutrition. What do you want?
Hello, Bickerson. This is Mr. Guernsey.
Yes, Mr. Guernsey.
I hate to be calling you at this hour, Bickerson, but something very urgent has come up.
What happened, then?
I just received word that our Chicago plant burned down and we weren't covered. This morning I filed bankruptcy proceedings and I'm closing up for good.
What?
I trust you'll find a new position and I do wish you good luck.
Well, thanks.
By the way, Bickerson, would you mind sending back that 2 weeks' salary I gave you? I need every penny I can scrape together.
Yeah, sure. I'll send it. Goodbye. Well, did you hear that, Blanche?
No, what was it?
My boss, Mr. Guernsey. Lost my job.
Wonderful!
Wonderful? What's wonderful about it?
Now you can collect your unemployment insurance.
Program of our new series for Old Gold Cigarettes, written and directed by Phil Rapp. We hope you'll be on hand next Friday night for Frank Morgan, Francis Langford, and Carmen Dragon and the audience. This is John Amici saying good night and good smoking with Old Gold. Frank Morgan appeared through arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Homecoming, starring Clark Gable and Lana Turner. Remember, next Friday at Old Gold Time, it'll be Frank Morgan, Don Amici, and Francis Langford with Carmen Dragon and his orchestra, brought to you by P. Lorillard Company. Don't forget, every Friday night on CBS, it's fun for the family.
The Old Gold Show, or The Bickersons, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from May 14th, 1948. This is an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Up next, The Four-Star Playhouse, an NBC show which featured four principal actors week after week. They were Loretta Young, Fred McMurray, Rosalind Russell, and Robert Cummings. Cummings stars in this next episode, and in that very same year, appeared on the silver screen with two of the leading ladies of the Four-Star Playhouse, Rosalind Russell in Tell It to the Judge, and alongside Loretta Young in The Accused. This NBC broadcast called Surprise for the Professor, heard on August 28, 1949.
Here transcribed is another in NBC's outstanding parade of new shows. Four-Star Playhouse, a repertory company of four great Hollywood stars.
This is Robert Cummings.
This is Rosalind Russell.
This is Fred McMurray.
This is Loretta Young.
Yes, these are the stars heard weekly on Four-Star Playhouse. Ladies and gentlemen, one of our four-star players and star of tonight's play, Robert Cummings.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And welcome to our Playhouse again. Every Sunday night at this time, Rosalind Russell, Fred McMurray, Loretta Young, and I appear in new dramatizations of stories selected from Cosmopolitan magazine. Stories by the world's leading writers of popular fiction. And tonight, Cummings carries culture to our playhouse. I play a young college professor who is not absent-minded, who is a quick fellow with a flip quip, and who is by no means indifferent to the girls. In fact, he's so different from indifferent, he's in difficulties indefinitely. And if that's confusing, it's nothing to the confusion and hoopla we're about to bring you in Richard Stern's gay comedy, Surprise for the Professor. A dignified college music, please, Dr. Harris.
Professor Oliver Winthrop Jones, huh? A-B-M-A, Ph.D., huh? And not a day over 30, huh? Oh-ho, aha, wow, wow. Get busy, Amanda, get busy.
Amanda Thomas, eh? Distressing young lady. Very good student, but those sweaters. Not that I'm against sweaters. Or perhaps I should rephrase that. Not that I object to sweaters, but such colors. It's distracting. The colors, I mean, to the student body, I mean. Well, not body. I mean, well, yes. Well, I must speak to her about it. After class, that is. Well, sometime, that is. About those sweaters, that is.
It's starting to get him. Let's see now. Today, the cardigan. Next, the yellow cable stitch. Wednesday, cashmere. Thursday, fleece. Friday, angora. Will Dr. Jones be bothered? I hope to kiss a pig.
It's too much. Scarlet, vermilion, fuchsia, yellow. Sweaters are for football fields. Sweaters are for grandmothers to knit and little dogs on cold days. Well, it's going to stop today. The edict is no more sweaters. That's final. No more sweaters. When we consider Concord as the cradle of American literature, Concord with its Emerson, Thoreau, Hawthorne, we can truly say, America, too, has its Stratford where literary genius flowered. Now, if there are any questions on the notes that you've taken, no questions, ladies and gentlemen, then I should like to dismiss the class. And may I ask Miss Amanda Thomas to step into my sweater, please? I mean Miss Amanda Sweater to step into... class! Now, wait a minute. Go home. Miss Thomas, you stay here.
Wanted to speak to me, Professor?
Yes. Miss Thomas.
Yes, Professor. May I look at your glasses, please?
Look at my glasses?
May I?
Why, yes, of course. Here, why?
Just as I thought.
What do you mean, just as you thought?
Plain glass in your spectacles. Optical falsies.
Miss Thomas.
I've been watching you during your lectures, and I was pretty sure your glasses were phony.
About your sweaters.
I won't tell anybody.
You don't have to tell anybody. They shriek to high heaven.
About your glasses, I mean. It's our secret.
What's our secret?
That you wear plain glass cheaters to make you look older.
You are a brash and impertinent young woman.
And you're a nice guy, Jonesy.
Well, thank you. Jonesy!
I like the way you lecture, and I like to read your essays. You know, they sound real mature. And it's nothing against a professor if he happens to look like Robert Cummings.
We are here to discuss your flamboyant sweaters, Miss Thomas.
I wish to discuss your beard.
I don't have a beard.
Well, that's why we should discuss it.
Really, Miss Thomas?
If you want to look older, why don't you grow a beard?
What if I don't like beards?
Then I must regard you as being against the Abraham Lincoln administration, sir.
Miss Thomas, your levity notwithstanding,
Come now, let's not fight the Civil War all over again.
About your sweaters again.
All right. What about them?
What about them?
Yes, what about them?
You don't know?
I like them.
You like them? Well, I like them too, but I mean...
You're thinking of the rest of the class, I know.
That's just it. I'm not thinking of the rest of the class. How can I think of anything when it... It's those colors.
Okay. I'll wear white.
White?
Black.
Miss Thomas?
Present.
It's unfair.
You're unfair. Wool raisers of the world, no, unite.
Now, see here.
You're anti-sheep.
I'll have you suspended.
You can't. My dad endowed this college, R. Llewellyn Thomas.
Oh, blackmail, huh?
Well, I don't know how he made his fortune. I'm just saying he sunk a lot of it in this college.
Sank.
As a matter of fact, he made his fortune making sweaters.
Then he should have hired his models and not spawned one.
Professor, good for you.
And there's more where that came from.
Jonesy, you are not only my favorite professor, but you've got a fighting heart and a fighting chin and a beard will look just lovely on it. Go to it, Jonesy.
Now, get this straight, Miss Thomas. There will be no beard.
But I like beards.
I dare say you like sweaters, too, but I won't wear them for you.
Silly boy.
You may go, Miss Thomas.
You will grow a beard, though, won't you?
I will not.
For your own dignity?
Not even for the faculty play.
For me?
No, especially not for you.
I'll make a bargain with you. You start a beard, and I'll stop sweaters.
Ha! Another attempt to pull the wool over my eyes, huh? Good afternoon, Miss Thomas. It was outrageous to think that an institution of learning could be bullied by its inmates. And I use the term advisedly, inmates. Miss Amanda Thomas was clearly non-compos mentis, as we say in the vernacular, or more technically, nuts. A beard, indeed. I walked across the campus fuming. Fire and brimstone. Who was she to tell me to wear a beard? I don't know to this day how it happened, but walking up the steps of my house, I must have tripped on something and... Oh! Doctor,
yeah.
Just sew it up.
A couple of more stitches, Professor.
I wonder if Ezio Pinza removes gallbladders.
A pardon?
Nothing.
Ouch! Yeah, there we are, Professor. And a neat suture, too.
Well, if the suture suits you, it suits me.
Again?
Nothing.
And now then, a little sulfur, a bit of sterile gall.
And a cozy table for two.
There you are.
Will there be a scar, Doctor?
Yeah, only on your dignity, Professor. Only on your dignity.
When can I take the bandage off my chin?
A couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks? Well, how will I shave?
You won't.
But I've got to shave.
Why?
Why?
Well, Santa Claus doesn't.
Leave Santa Claus out of it.
Just grow a beard, that's all.
But I can't grow a beard.
Well, then you don't have to shave.
Well, what I mean to say is... I don't want to grow a beard.
Why not?
Spite. I won't have her thinking that I did it to make her wear field jackets.
Perhaps I'd better have a look at your head.
Never mind. What do I owe
you? I'll send you a beard.
Imagine 2 weeks and a beard.
Well, Uncle Sam wears a beard.
I don't care!
Well, aren't you interested in your country?
Just let me out of here, that's all.
The Smith brothers wore beards.
The winters were colder then. Good beard.
Professor! Hey, Jonesy. Jump in, Professor.
Oh, it's you. I'll walk, thanks.
I heard about your accident. Come on. Jump in. Tell Amanda all about it, huh?
Well, it is a long walk. Very well. Nice car.
Thank you. Too bad about your chin.
Oh, it's nothing, just clear to the bone.
How did it happen?
I fell down my front steps.
Oh. It's all my fault, of course.
Your fault? Just how do you associate yourself with my accident?
It wasn't an accident, Jonesy.
You don't think I plunged headfirst down the steps as a term project, do you?
But it's so perfectly simple. I planted the idea in your unconscious.
The idea of plunging down the steps?
No, the idea of growing a beard. Your unconscious took it from there.
Miss Thomas, you are suffering from hallucinations.
It's possible, of course, that if the suggestion came from anyone else, your unconscious mind would have rejected the idea. Illuminating, ain't it?
Miss Thomas, have you seen the new nylon straitjackets in stunning pastel shades?
You're in love with me, Jonesy.
I am?
Yes, I've suspected it for some time.
You have?
The way you look at me, the way you don't look at me.
Heads I lose, tails I lose, huh?
You love me.
It's a revolting development.
This so-called accident proves it. It's psychology.
Manifestly the subject with which you are most likely to flunk out.
Oh, now you're just being perfectly dense.
No, believe me, it's the most natural thing in the world with me. I won my Ph.D. in a quiz show.
You know, Jonesy, I think it's kind of sweet you're being in love with me.
I am not in love with you.
Ah, sure you are.
I may even have a slight loathing for you, Miss Thomas. Oh.
Don't fight it, Jonesy. Don't fight it. Relax and, well, no. Just get a load of me as I drive away. Young, lithe, a strong, healthy animal.
Then why don't you walk?
Haven't you heard about the wolves, Professor?
No, have they got a good team this year?
Well, I see you're going to be troubled.
Did you think that I was going to be a stammering pushover for the usual blandishments of women?
Well, it did look like a setup.
Well, I'm not. I'm going to be trouble.
Hard to get.
Impossible to get. Get it?
Got it.
Remember it.
But wait until you see what's new in knitwear. So long.
So long.
Hard to get.
You are listening to the four-star Playhouse dramatization of Richard Stern's Cosmopolitan magazine story, Surprise for the Professor, starring Robert Cummings with Mary Jane Croft.
I spent the evening reading Henry James' The Aspirin Papers. I had a slight headache. However, it was pleasant stuff. Gentlemen behaved like gentlemen. Ladies did not wear snug, brightly colored sweaters. And men had beards practically from birth. I arose the next morning confident, restored, and refreshed. I was again the master of my fate. Until I looked in the mirror. Around the bandage on my chin was a very tiny beard. I looked like a cheap grade of sandpaper. Before breakfast, I stopped at Dr. Swithin's to have the bandage changed.
Going to have a nice beard there, Professor.
Yes, the day I am a man.
You have a nice chin for a beard.
Yes, they were made for each other.
Yeah, I wish I had a chin.
Well, keep on exercising it like that, and you'll look like Dick Tracy in no time.
You're an odd sort of a professor.
Yes, but I'll get even.
With who?
Whom? Whom?
You're a professor, all right.
Make it quick, Doctor. I'm late for breakfast at the faculty club already.
Professor Jones, wasn't that young Miss Thomas I saw you riding with yesterday?
Yes, Professor Clark, it was.
Daughter of our most important trustee and benefactor.
So she has pointedly informed me.
Very lovely young girl.
A sweater girl.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Good hunting.
Professor Clark, I am not a hunter.
At least you don't go about armed. What's the trick, anyhow?
I just say, drop dead.
Yes?
It doesn't always kill.
Well, I don't understand, Joe.
That's because sometimes it only stuns.
But I don't...
Understand, no. Excuse me, Professor, I have some papers to correct in my office. Good morning. Come in.
Jonesy.
Go away.
You don't mean that, Professor.
I wonder if there's a DDT for people.
Say, did you see the school paper about us?
I'm afraid to listen.
Bert Chambers, the editor, has us engaged practically.
Is this Bert Chambers a very athletic young man?
Oh, never mind. I told him off, but good. Right in the main dining hall.
Oh, Lord. There were people around?
Students.
Oh, I was afraid there'd be people. Now, see here, why don't you return to that lovely past when your great-grandmother and your great-grandfather hadn't even met?
You know, if this were a movie, I'd tell the audience to go home and let the babysitter go, because this can end in only one way. We get married.
Very possibly, but not to each other.
Stick around, audience.
Miss Thomas, this entire thing is fantastically absurd, and I demand that you clear out of my office.
You can't talk like that to me.
Out before I throw you out.
Get your clumsy hands off me.
Very well, but you must get out.
Why'd you take your clumsy hands off me?
Because you told me to.
That's right, I did. I shouldn't have, though. It was so nice.
Oh, of all the insufferable...
I was sure you had it in you someplace. Bye-bye, Blackbeard.
Thomas, sir. The name, sir, is Thomas.
Thomas.
R. Llewellyn Thomas.
R. Llewellyn Thomas.
My daughter tells me you're in love with her.
Mr. Thomas, I am not in love with your daughter. I am not even faintly fond of your daughter. I have tried to convince your daughter of that.
Hopeless, isn't it?
Hopeless?
Trying to convince her you don't love her. I told her mother the same thing for years.
No, oh no. This can't go on for years.
Like mother, like daughter is what I say.
But I don't want to marry Amanda.
Has nothing whatever to do with it.
Look, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
You can be a general of the armies, and that girl will still pass out the orders.
I wonder if I should kill myself.
She's not so terrible.
I do not want to get married. Is that clear?
As if what you want matters.
If she marries me, I'll run away after the ceremony.
You'll be back, though. I was.
Obviously.
I've heard a lot about you, Jones.
You shall hear less and less, and then finally, nothing.
I thought I'd just drop in and see what my future son-in-law looks like. Well, chin up, old boy.
If I'd kept it up when I fell, I'd have cut my throat and been out of all this money. There was only one alternative. I'd resign before submitting to being lassoed and branded with a bobby pin. I wrote out a resignation. I chose my words beautifully. They rolled and reverberated. I finished the draft and carried it home with me, cherishing it as a spy cherishes his vial of poison. On the morning of the 14th day of the beard, I went back to Dr. Swithin's.
Ah, there. Magnificent blush you've got on your chin now.
Yes, I'm the envy of every fox on the campus.
They're keeping it nicely trimmed, I see.
Well, I had to do something. It was getting caught in my teeth.
Growing your own dental floss, eh? Well, the wound healed perfectly. Goodbye now.
But what about the new bandage?
Oh, you don't need a bandage. You're cured. Your beard is tidy. A man can't ask for more. I'll send you my bill.
It was like one of those dreams where you find yourself walking down Main Street in your shorts. I felt naked with my now uncovered beard. Of course, I could shave it off or fake a bandage. Oddly, neither scheme appealed to me. Besides, there was my 10 o'clock lecture. I entered the campus and almost stumbled over the ankles of Amanda Thomas on the stone bench outside the lecture hall.
Oh, I've been waiting for you, Jonesy. Jonesy!
Oh, shut up.
Oh, your beard.
You like it?
It's magnificent.
I was just on my way to set it on fire.
Oh. Poor Jonesy. You just won't give in, will you?
Look, will you go marry an underclassman and have 16 retarded children?
I want you.
The vice versa is distinctly not the case.
I think you need a rest.
I need a rest from you. You and those sweaters.
I wouldn't go so far or be so trite as to say that beard has sapped your strength.
Well, be so far and go so trite, because believe me, it has.
Jonesy.
Miss Thomas.
You need something, Jonesy.
I do? Well, not you. There's just one thing that I need, and that is...
Don't say it. It's what I've been trying to tell you all the time.
Is that why you ambushed me out here?
I am here with Tidings.
Really? Where's Tidings? Watering the horses?
My father wants to see you.
He did see me.
Well, he wants to see you again.
What
this
for?
This time with President Clark of the university.
Oh.
You'll find out what for at lunch. Here's Dad's note to you.
I see. This, then, is it.
What, then, is what?
I have a letter also to deliver.
Oh? What kind of a letter?
They'll find out at lunch. This was it. I went home and got out my lovely letter of resignation. I read it over. It was a masterpiece of vitriol H2SO4. Then I stomped off to keep my meeting with Llewellyn Thomas and President Clark at the Handsome Thomas home. Miss Amanda Thomas answered my sweater. Or my knock.
Well, you're just in time, Professor. Jonesy, you didn't.
I didn't.
You cut off your beard.
Then I did.
You shaved off that lovely thing.
You have a cute perception, Miss Thomas.
Oh, and you had such a cute beard.
Perhaps, but I did not aim to be your fuller brush man.
Oh, come in, Jonesy.
Thank you.
Why did you shave it off?
It was getting into my food. And if I may be so blunt, my food was getting into it. It was getting rich.
I know why you shaved it off. You shaved it off because you knew I liked it.
That's nonsense.
And if I said I didn't like it, you'd grow it back just to spite me.
You're flattering yourself.
So do those bright sweaters. And I'm going to wear them in class now as long as I like.
I don't care how long you wear them. I care how quick you wear them. Now, will you be good enough to direct me into the presence of your father and President Clark?
Through that door.
Thank you.
You open it first, of course.
Elementary.
Good
afternoon, gentlemen.
Oh, there you are, Professor Jones. Glad to see you. Glad to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. How are you, Dr. Clark?
I see your chin is healed up, Professor. But what's wrong with your nose?
Oh, it's nothing. It's just blood.
You shaved, too.
Yes, sir.
Professor Jones, Mr. Thomas here has generously seen fit to endow Kennedy College with another and even more generous sum of money. A rather large sum of money. A sum of money...
Point, Clark. Get to the point.
Oh, yes, yes, quite. The purpose of the new gift is to establish a chair of creative literature. And after careful consideration, we have decided to appoint you the first R. Llewellyn Thomas Professor of Creative Literature at Kennedy College.
Oh. Well, that's very kind of you, gentlemen.
No strings attached, Professor. You don't have to tear off box tops or answer riddles in song. You don't have to marry anybody either. Hmm?
Gentlemen, much as I appreciate the offer, much as I am touched, I feel impelled at
feel
this time...
Feel impelled not to be impulsive, Professor. Think it over. Step out into the hall and give it a whirl.
I really don't have to think it over, Mr. Thomas.
Walk it around outside a bit while Clark and I exchange stupid anecdotes.
Well, if you insist, Mr. Thomas. Excuse me.
We'll expect you back in 5 minutes, Jones.
Yes, sir. Oh, Amanda.
Well, Jonesy?
They offered me a new professorship.
Oh, congratulations.
No.
Why not?
I'm going to turn it down.
Why?
I'm resigning from Kennedy College.
Resigning?
Yes, I'll turn in my cap and gown tomorrow.
On account of me?
Oh, there you go, flattering yourself again.
Oh, Jonesy, don't do it. I'll drop out of sight. I'll leave college. I'll become a hermit. I'll wear a potato sack.
I'm quitting. I'm going to hand your father and President Clark the prepared resignation I've been carrying for days.
Oh.
You see? It's not an angry impulse.
Well, in that case, there's nothing more I can say. Go ahead and resign. I quit, too.
Amanda, wait.
I've got a class.
Amanda. Miss Thomas.
Just let me... Go.
But listen. That top step.
Yes, it's a Lulu, I know. Prexy Clark went to the doctor.
Oh, did he? Well, mm-hmm. Help me up. This sidewalk needs inner springs.
Nona, you just lie still.
Why?
You're busted open again.
Again? Amanda, not...
Your chin. Clear to the bone.
I'll have to grow a beard again.
You want to grow a beard again.
I do not want to grow a beard again. I never want to grow a beard again.
Darling, you have nothing to say about it.
They itch me.
Your unconscious makes you take those dyes.
I'm going to sue that guy unconscious.
You see, deep in your inner self, you love me dearly.
Oh, certainly, dearly.
Don't fight it, darling. If you don't marry me, you'll just keep taking it on the chin.
Oh, no.
You'll have to grow beards indefinitely.
Oh, anything rather than that.
You see, Jonesy, your unconscious knows you love me.
My unconscious is in love with you?
Desperately.
Then let unconscious marry you.
Will you be at the wedding, honey?
Wedding? I'll be on the honeymoon with you.
Oh, Jonesy.
You don't for a minute think I'd leave you alone with him, do you? A tricky guy like that unconscious?
You have been listening to Four Star Playhouse, tonight starring Robert Cummings in Surprise for the Professor, written by Richard Stern and adapted for radio by Milton Geiger. Mary Jane Croft was featured as Amanda. Others in the cast were Frank Nelson, Charles Seal, and Herbert Butterfield. Four Star Playhouse is directed by Warren Lewis. Music composed and conducted by Albert Harris. Portions were transcribed. Robert Cummings will soon be seen in the Columbia Pictures comedy, Tell It to the Judge. Listen again next Sunday at this same time for another special adaptation of a popular fiction story selected from Cosmopolitan magazine, written by the world's foremost fiction authors.
The Four Star Playhouse, untuned to yesterday, an NBC broadcast from August 28, 1949. And that does it for this hour of comedy, untuned to yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.